Good evening, Minneapolis Metro. Happy Wednesday and welcome back to today's episode sponsored by Squarespace. As you guys know, today we're mostly recounting the events of the election last week, kind of doing a full rundown. And now we are finally at our local hot topic, Minnesota 2. Joining me today are election experts, Naomi Kasai.
Hello, everyone.
And Amber Toms.
Hey, Minneapolis.
It's so good to have both of you guys here today. Seriously, thank you for being here. So let's first start by reminding listeners that by Minnesota 2, I did mean the 2nd Congressional District of Minnesota. It's made up of 4 counties and portions of 2 others, and currently 3 of the 4 main counties swing towards the right. The parts of Washington County now, kind of generally swing left, and Rice County is also a swing county with polls that, past elections show that they kind of go back and forth. So considering all these tight lines, let's dive into what else led up to this election. It was a surprise, it's a typically Republican district. And these are not new candidates, right, you guys?
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. Actually, we know these 2 candidates very well at this point. It's kind of like a rematch from the last election in 2016.
Okay. Well, all right. Let's tell the listeners a little bit about the repeat candidates that we have here. Naomi, you take it away.
Okay. So one of the candidates is Jason Lewis. He's actually an incumbent. He served in Congress from 2016 until his loss last week. He was a member of the U.S. House of Representatives. Previous to that, he worked as a radio show host and a conservative commentator.
Okay, so that is our incumbent, right? Daniel Lewis? Yes. Okay, Jason Lewis, sorry. Amber, could you offer some insight on Angie Craig?
Sure. Angie Craig comes from a pretty modest background. She grew up in a working class family. She got a journalism degree from the University of Memphis. She worked at St. Jude Medical for over 10 years. Her and her wife now have 4 kids. She's actually the first openly gay woman to win the district, which is great. But yeah, she definitely seems like a woman of the people.
Okay. And she was one of the candidates from the 2016 elections as well, right? They both ran against each other.
Yeah. In 2016, Lewis and Craig ran against each other. She lost by less than 2% of the vote. A lot of people think that's because of the independent candidate running. In the election 2 years ago, Paula Overby got almost 8% of the vote.
Oh my God, 8%! I didn't even know that. If if she got half of those votes, she would have won last candidacy.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Well, it was exactly that kind of the pattern and the competition, this kind of anxiety-inducing neck-to-neck game in District 2 that brought me right back to 2016. I did notice that there was a huge difference in funding between the 2 candidates. I mean, when I saw Angie Craig's numbers in comparisons to Lewis, I was truly taken aback. And if she didn't win after that, then, I didn't know what was gonna push it over.
Yeah, Craig's campaign this time around, she raised almost $2 million more than Lewis's campaign. And in addition to that, several PACs reported spending almost $1 million more on ads opposing Lewis.
Okay, so this, I guess that shows that in a way that she's a stronger competitor, because did she use all of the money that she raised?
She didn't. She didn't use all of her money. She still had some cash on hand by the end of the election.
Well, I mean, I guess that shows, your ability to rile up your audience. And then I guess something else must have given her an edge, right? I mean, Naomi, what do you think was the catalyst for her to win? I mean, I guess I'm asking, why were things different this year?
Oh, I believe her platform was stronger this time around, and she has also gained some recognition from the last election. So I felt like she was much more comfortable with voters this time around.
Mm-hmm.
And her campaign ads were more focused on healthcare and education, specifically when we talk about education. When she talked about education, she was kind of talking about her son's decision to pursue technical training rather than a 4-year college degree. And from watching her ads, I personally thought that her stories were just, she had a good story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
About her mother, her struggle to pay for healthcare, and then her own struggle when she was going to college. She was working, I believe, 2 jobs trying to get through college. So I think that made her look so relatable to voters.
Yeah, I mean, you remember being in college struggling with faith religion, and and I'm sure the focus on education elicited a strong response as well, you know, because she's got the hands-on experience of a real mom. And I think that Lewis failed to connect that way to his constituents this time around. The disconnect seemed more prevalent and more powerful, especially with the sitting Republican president's approval ratings that are so low. You really need to go out of your way to make sure that the people you're representing feel like you're representing them.
That was actually interesting, because given the fact that the district voted for Trump in the 2016 election, and Lewis's support for President Trump, you would actually expect that would help him, but it did not. His support for President Trump, I believe, might have even contributed to his loss, because his approval rate is going down. So maybe that was why it was reflected in this election.
And he did get an endorsement from the president, kind of solidifying that connection between the two.
It's interesting. If they voted for Trump, why wouldn't that help him?
They did vote for Trump, and they actually voted for Republican congressmen for 2 decades, I think, starting from 2000 until the last election. But when it comes to presidential elections, the district has also a history of voting for Democrats as well. Mm-hmm. Like, they voted for President Obama in 2012.
Oh, okay.
And Angie Craig didn't lose by that much 2 years ago, so the district was clearly already leaning kind of Democratic.
Okay, so from what I hear both of you telling me, the margins were super narrow and the stakes were very high. And I would say it's probably having to do with the swing in the political climate right now. Everything's so hot and cold, and, you know, I feel like Lewis didn't do a good job of adjusting to it.
Not just him, but I feel like the Republican Party in general didn't focus enough on economic factors. They should have done that. That's actually my opinion, but they should have, because they did lose. I know, I understand why they didn't choose to talk about healthcare, because the Republican Party failed to fulfill the promise of repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act. However, the Republican candidates should have emphasized more on the strong economy. I feel like Lewis was just trying to support Trump and was making statements boldly on immigration and was disregarding the strong economy, which would have helped him.
Yeah, Lewis was focusing a bit too much on the hot button social issues, and that just really isn't relevant to the district.
Exactly. I mean, this isn't a state on the borderline, so I don't think voters in Minnesota care so much about illegal border crossings.
I think, yeah, that's not a Minnesota thing. I think that when a candidate adheres to these polarizing issues like that, they are ultimately trying to escape by on the party name and label and association. It's kind of like that free rider problem. It's no longer localized to that district and, you know, the platform that he needs and to provide the people to identify with. But rather, you know, focuses on what the party identifies with, you know, and it kind of alienates your local population. And those are essentially your voters. Or am I wrong? I don't know.
I don't know. Actually, you know what? That's one of the things that I noticed about Craig. That was one of her strengths. She did not bring up Trump at all. From what I saw in her ads, she did not focus on Trump or the controversy behind Lewis, on things that he has said as a radio host. She was just emphasizing on healthcare and education. I think it was a good thing for her, and I believe it worked for her advantage.
And I see how that would resonate in an audience almost constantly divided by party politics. You know, it's not like you have one person or like even one district that goes completely on one side or the other. You can't make them feel villainized for their other views, right? Because that's essentially what you would be doing. But touching on that radio show that you just mentioned, I do remember reading about those quotes, and I was just shocked. So for listeners who don't know what I'm talking about, Lewis was a radio jockey, a conservative, you know, kind of like a host, just like me. And it was 2012, and he was expressing multiple times how upset he was that he couldn't call women sluts anymore. And I mean, can you imagine that somebody was saying, and we're a panel of all women here even. And I think that it was shocking to hear somebody to have that kind of opinion in 2012, because by that year, I mean, we were on the way to radical changes in, you know, representation of women in this country. And we have been for years. And I think it's so important to have the representation of our country on our side as women. I feel like that might have, you know, alienated a lot of voters.
Yeah, I don't know what world people like him are living in, but it's certainly not
No.
But I don't think it really hindered his polls because, you know, candidates like Roy Moore, for example.
Speaking of Roy Moore.
We're just kind of living in this bizarro world where a lot of these things are normalized. And so I don't think it really hurt him, maybe with the tight blue lines within this district, the outrage might have sparked some pushback, but overall this year it didn't really get much coverage.
And that's very unfortunate because when things like this are normalized, right, then it becomes normal to be like, oh yeah, well, of course I call women that word. You know, it's like a lack of respect. But I think, you know, I'm sad it didn't get that attention, but it goes kind of off of what Naomi already mentioned. You know, Craig didn't air that dirty laundry the way that she could have potentially exploited. It could have been a lot worse. She could have based her whole campaign off of that, you know, villainizing factor. And that may have been why it didn't contribute, you know, to like the complete deconstruction and implosion of his campaign, because I think that publicized would have torpedoed it.
I really admire her for that, and I feel like it would have she would have faced some backlash if she did put out like an ad or a statement about what he had said years ago, because at this point I don't really think it matters to voters what, you know, their candidates say, because some voters are just, they vote party. Like, yeah, well, Trump has said so many things.
Yeah. Well, some people could shoot
He's
people in the
president.
Middle of Times Square, and people would still support
He's still the president. So I don't think it matters to voters at this point. Like,
right.
She stuck with what was important to voters, and I think that's why she won.
And, you know, yes, and it's unfortunately becoming less and less common to see people take, I guess, that high road. I mean, you know, and then also like maybe a platform-based road to that campaign. But I mean, it's obvious why you would like her for it, even though it is, you know, less common to see. I saw that the National Republican Congressional Committee actually only spent $350,000 opposing Craig, but all that money, you know, that largest sum of money was used in his campaign to badmouth Craig. I mean, and I feel like that must have alienated his voters even further, because you're already saying this about women. And on top of that, you know, you're bad-mouthing this, you know, openly gay, powerful, successful woman. And I think that it just set him up in another negative light. I don't think that it helped him any. Did you guys think that she was going to win?
Yeah, actually, I did predict that she was going to win based on the polls. Because the poll showed her leading by big margin. For instance, a New York Times poll, which was conducted from end of September to early October, she was at 51% and Lewis was just at 39%. So I did think that she had a chance to win based off of the poll numbers.
Okay, well, wow. Well, you're better than me, because I did not expect her to win. And I'll be honest, you know, I didn't predict it. And the last election, Craig was surpassed by...
I didn't do any wager, though.
Oh, you didn't? You should have bet money. Come on.
It was too close.
Well, okay, so I was insane. In that last election, Craig was surpassed in, you know, a very narrow 2% defeat. And I expected similar results with this election cycle, because it was so similar. It was definitely too close, you know, at this point for me to wager anything either. Like, I wouldn't have bet anything. But, you know, with polls from the New York Times and Gifford's PAC, it did show, you know, the ones that you're talking about, it showed that Craig would win by over 9%. And it would still have her winning, you know, with those numbers, even with the margin of error being put into effect. However, on the other hand, I saw that there were polls by National Republican Congressional Committee and the Lewis campaign that showed Lewis winning by 3% and 1% respectively, which, yes, could have been turned over with the margin of error in these polls. But, I mean, you guys are sure to know that this district is known to be 2% more favorable to Republican candidates in elections than the national average, and that in turn offered Lewis a huge home front edge. And I think that it maybe, you know, was because it was so reminiscent of the 2016 elections to me, and I thought that it would be the safest bet to think that Lewis was going to win, but I mean, I guess I was wrong, and they did surprise me, you know, after two decades, I guess. What about you, Amber? Did you think that, you know, do you think the same as me, or did you agree with Naomi?
I really did think Craig would win. As Naomi said, the district has voted for Obama. And going into this election, 538 found that the district has some elasticity, meaning that the district does have the likelihood of moving slightly with the national political environment. So there's been a lot of backlash against Trump, and I think that definitely hurt Lewis in this district. So I thought Craig had a strong chance of winning going into this election, especially because of how close the 2016 election was. And the polls this year consistently showing her leading. I thought she was definitely the front runner this time around.
Okay, well, that makes sense. And it also makes you better than me, as well as Naomi. And it's certainly impressive for both of you to have predicted it. These were such tight, you know, districts, and these types of tight swing districts were almost impossible to call. I mean, even as we are recording today, listeners, we have a New York district that still hasn't been called yet. And, you know, I guess it just goes to show like how tight this election really was, and how much we were excited, I guess, to see what some of these results are. People are excited to find out. But let's go bigger for a minute before we finish up today. Can you guys provide some insight beyond Minnesota too? I mean, to wrap up, let's address it on a national scale. Like, what did you guys find in terms of political climate now?
I was just very happy to see so many women get elected to public office, especially states like Arizona and Tennessee, where they elected women for Senate for the first time. So regardless of party, it was just very interesting to see record number of women that are elected to serve in Congress. And then we saw large turnout of voters in a midterm election. Our political system may not be perfect, and we may not like every candidate that won the election, but more citizens are becoming interested and engaged in local elections, and I think that's a big step. In addition to women, we also see a diverse group this time around. We're seeing members of the LGBTQ.
Angie Craig, is she the first?
Angie Craig, yes.
She's gay. Yeah.
Yes, she is the first lesbian, I think, to represent the district. And then we saw the Senate, the candidate that won the Senate seat in Arizona. She's a bisexual, a governor in Colorado, openly gay. So we're seeing a more diverse Native Americans. Woo. Muslims.
Oh, yeah, so, the first two Muslim women in Congress came in this cycle.
Yeah, so I think this is, it looks to me, I'm being optimistic, obviously, but to me, this is a big step.
It's a shift, yeah.
Yes.
I agree.
I honestly was hoping for more of a blue wave selection.
Me too! Woo!
But yeah, a lot of Democrats did win Republican districts. And I think it's encouraging that some of the races the Democrats lost were closer than I expected. Beto in Texas, for example, he got more votes than I thought he would in his race against Ted Cruz. It was definitely more competitive than I thought it would be. So I'm happy about that. Even if this election there wasn't as much blue as I would have hoped, I am happy to see that some surprising areas around the country are starting to shift a bit. And I'm happily surprised that the Democrats are starting to become a bit more competitive in districts they might not have had a chance of winning a few years ago. So I feel like this realignment is long overdue.
And I totally agree, especially with, you know, Beto in Texas, like you were mentioning. That's insane. I was overthrown. I mean, in Texas, you know, that's almost like a joke. Yeah. And you're once again right. It's been a long time coming. And I think the left-leaning voters in this district have finally found the gusto and the oomph, you know, needed to push forward in tight elections like this. It's important to keep hope when you're fighting against, I guess it seems like a system. After two decades, they finally prevailed. It has been a pleasure covering these topics with both of you today. And I've thoroughly enjoyed the rhetoric and brilliant insight provided. But unfortunately, it is time to wrap up our episode for tonight. But thank you to our special guest once again, Naomi Kasai.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
Yay. And Amber Toms.
Thank you very much.
And it was awesome to have you guys here. Both of you are better than me, so thank you for being there for our listeners. And I hope you both had a good time getting, you know, delving into the local politics of the season tonight. I hope our listeners did too. And thanks again to our sponsor, Squarespace. And you will definitely hear from us next week. Thank you. Bye. Say bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.